Welcome to Build the Invisible, a podcast hosted by me, Daniel G, where we explore career journeys of today's most successful professionals. Each week, we sit down with guests to discuss the challenges they faced and the lessons that they've learned along the way, from dealing with failure to the importance of being patient and listening to others. We uncover the strategies and mindset that have helped our guests build successful careers. Join us as we delve into the stories of those who have persevered and achieved greatness in their fields. This week on the Build the Invisible podcast, I chat with David Lampitt, CEO of Tennis Data Innovations. I sat down with David to talk about his journey so far. We discussed creating your own luck, being ambitious, and what we can learn from our setbacks. By way of brief background, David has worked in high-profile executive positions across a raft of sports, including head of financial regulation at the English FA, chief executive of then Premier League club Portsmouth, chief executive of Supporters Direct, managing director of Sport Radar, and is currently CEO of Tennis Data Innovations. You can read the full transcript on danielg.com. You can watch the full interview on YouTube and also listen to this podcast to hear the full story of David's journey to date. I really hope you enjoy it. David, thanks so much for joining and having the chat with me. There were loads of places, when I was doing a bit of prep for the conversation, there were loads of places I was thinking about starting with our conversation, only because we've known each other for quite a long time, bearing in mind the work that you'd done in football, out of football, inside and outside sport, more generally. And part of the reason for me trying to write a book about the entertainment industry or how to make a career in it, I thought you'd be perfect to have a conversation with, because probably similar to you, and I know we've done some talks to this effect beforehand, I get asked a lot of the time, how do you go about building a career in sport, in music, in television, in fashion, whatever, maybe not fashion, I don't get asked too regularly, but just more to do with how you go about...
Yeah, that's the stretch, Dan, that's the stretch.
How do you go about building the skills, building the soft skills and actually the technical skills to go about doing something that you're passionate, you're curious about, that you want to get involved in and do more of. And I always find it was a very hard and easy question to answer, really. But again, without obviously monopolizing the conversation, I would just be really interested to hear at least just some thoughts and insights. Then we can take the conversation in different ways about whether sport and football was something you always wanted to get involved in, how you went about either strategically, slightly by chance or otherwise getting involved, and some of the lessons, ideas and habits and all that type of stuff that you've learned along the way.
Yeah. So maybe I'll just start with kind of how I got involved, I guess. And I don't have a background that has any particular resonance for sport. I mean, I love sport and have always played sport, but I was like, maths was my subject at school. I studied languages at university. I then went on to study accountancy, you know, professional qualifications. I guess there was nothing in there that pointed me specifically towards sport, but yeah, I've always been a big sports fan. I've always been passionate about it. And I always obviously liked the idea of potentially somehow using my skills in that arena, but yeah, hadn't necessarily worked out how that would come about. And so the story of how I got involved is quite a funny one, I guess, because it has a few good kind of lessons or, you know, kind of elements to it. I got my break in sport by taking a job with the Football Association in 2003. And that came about because I think at least a year before I took that job, possibly even slightly more than a year, but let's call it a year before I took that job, I read an article in the Sunday Times one Sunday, in the sport section. And it was about the fact, so, and at the time I was working as a a kind of a financial investigator. Like after I qualified as an accountant, I did, I kind of joined a particular team and we were doing kind of forensic financial investigation. And so there was an article in the Sunday Times about the fact that the FA at this time, there was a bit of ongoing scandal about the football transfer market, about bungs and the bung culture, and that the FA was determined to try to do something about it and had for the first time employed a compliance, a senior compliance officer, they just employed a head of compliance, I think, to kind of bolster their efforts to regulate this part of the game. And I read this, and honestly, like as I was reading it, I was thinking, this is what I should do. Like, as in, you know, this would just be a great thing to get involved in. And not only would it be a great thing to get involved in, but I've got a bunch of skills that I've built up in my, you know, prior experience in my short professional career to that point. That I really think could be quite relevant. And so the kind of the person who was the head of compliance just appointed was named in the article. And so I sat down and wrote a letter to him, basically. And I confess I've never done that at any other time kind of before or since, in fact, but I was, you know, I really felt that there was something in there that kind of resonated with my skill set and experience. And so composed a letter and sent it off to Steve Barrow, who, I don't want to ruin the story, but ended up being my boss. I got a very polite letter back, I think within a week or so, just saying, you know, thanks very much. Was interested to read your letter and CV. Don't believe everything you read in the papers. We're not actually recruiting anyone at the moment, but, you know, we'll keep you on file. And of course, I, like everyone else who received that letter, thought, yeah, okay, that's when they say on file, that is a euphemism for waste paper basket, and move on. And so actually I did move on, and I ended up planning a very different career path, in fact, or a very different career move, because I was planning to move to Australia. I'm half Aussie, and you know, that kind of, not as a result of that, but you know, at the time I was obviously looking for what was going to be my next career move. Anyway, at least six months later, I got a cold call out of the blue. By the way, can you hear me okay, Dan? Because I'm getting a message saying the connection's a bit wobbly. Or is that right?
It's a little bit out, but it's your voice is still fine, so it's absolutely fine.
Okay. I got a cold call out of the blue one evening. I still remember exactly kind of where I was when I took the call, and it was from a recruitment consultant who had been appointed by the FA. And they said, well, you know that letter you wrote 6 months ago? The FA is actually now thinking of recruiting somebody into that team. And yeah, they kept hold of your CV. And would you still be interested in putting yourself forward? And I was slightly taken aback and thought, well, yeah, I've got nothing to lose. You know, it'll never happen. You know, the world and his mother will be applying for this job and it'll never happen. But, you know, we might as well go through the process, and it'll be interesting to get an insight into the inner workings of the FA. And yeah, like, you know, I went from first round interview down to the final 10, down to the final three, at which point, my girlfriend, now my wife at the time, said, you know, we might have to think about not moving to Australia if this goes any further. And yeah, and then they ended up offering me the job. And then we did have this kind of crossroads moment of deciding, whether I pursued a different career path, actually, but you know, staying in the work that I was doing, but moving to the other side of the world, or to go for it in football. Or in sport generally, but football specifically. And yeah, I chose the latter very clearly. And that was kind of largely due to the unique opportunity that job presented, basically. So yeah, it's maybe a story that probably doesn't happen very often. And so, you know, I feel like, yeah, maybe I got lucky, but, you know, as we'll talk about maybe in response to other parts of the narrative that you're building up, actually, I'm a great believer in the fact that you make your own luck. And probably nobody else saw that article and wrote in a letter, but also, I guess, sought to match their professional experience to the sort of thing that, you know, that the FA was looking for at that time. And then kind of somehow pulled it off. So I think, you know, I've told the story before, and I've told it to kind of students in particular, and people who are starting out in their career, because I think, I'm a great believer in the fact that you do make your own luck over time. You make your own luck, right? You know, the best teams are always the luckiest teams, they say, and I can only say that in the course of my career, there have been, I think, one or more than one probably examples of exactly that.
Hello, and welcome back to Build the Invisible with me, Daniel G. In addition to sharing insights and lessons on career success, I'm also the founder of a charity fashion brand called 13. At 13shop.co.uk, you can order hoodies, t-shirts and socks, with all proceeds going towards cancer research. So not only can you evaluate your personal and professional development with the insights shared on this podcast, but you can also support a great cause with your purchase from 13. Visit 13shop.co.uk today to browse our collection and make a difference. Thank you for supporting Build the Invisible and the mission of 13.
You've taken the words out of my mouth, actually, David, with a couple of things I was going to say, which is great. Because a lot of the conversations I've had with other people talk exactly about that type of proactivity. And the more people that I speak to, the more I'm encouraged by the concept of sort of, you know, proactivity of putting disparate ideas together sometimes to form, you know, a way forward or a plan, and how consuming content in lots of different ways usually helps that. And part of the thing that I'm trying to explain to people in the book is you marry that investment in yourself by reading, by doing, by consuming, mixed with that sort of proactivity, usually leads to an exponential ability to have lots of irons in fires, as long as they can constantly be managed.
Yep. I fully agree, and I fully subscribe to that. I think, you know, the reason you kind of, yeah, those sorts of truisms about making your own luck come around is because actually the people who get lucky are the people who manage those multiple, I guess, opportunity frameworks, perhaps without even realizing, or certainly, you know, not consciously doing it. And I think there is an element of that kind of, if you're constantly leading your life thinking, how can I take advantage of this or some other relationship to get an opportunity, that's probably not going to work. But actually, I think the reality is, as you say, if you open yourself up to kind of those avenues and channels that, you know, that are not necessarily are not going to present themselves to you, so there's hard work involved in that. So, you know, be open to those things, you know, keep an eye out for them. As you said, you know, consuming, the fact that I happened to be reading the paper that Sunday literally changed my life, you know, and changed the course of my life. Because otherwise it probably would, you know, even if the recruitment consultant had, had put something out in the market, I probably wouldn't have seen it at the time, you know, so it's one of those. So as you say, kind of make those avenues and make those channels available to you. And then, I said, it's also about, and again, we'll probably touch on this, but it's also about hard work, right? I'm a great believer in the fact that, you know, the opportunity that strikes, it's like the actor who has worked unbelievably hard for 20 years and then is an overnight phenomenon. But actually, you know, they've worked incredibly hard for 20 years building a framework of opportunities, and one of them hits at a certain point in time. But, the reality is, that's a much more common outcome than, yeah, genuinely somebody who just is an overnight success. You know, that does of course happen, but those are the unicorns. And yeah, I'm not a unicorn. I'm just a, you know, an ordinary guy who has worked hard and yeah, has hopefully in the course of their career kind of sought out those connections with other people, with, as you say, other content, other areas of interest. And, you know, through making multiple connections, you know, sometimes those two things come together, you know, the kind of the universe somehow collides. So
it's fascinating how you mention all of that, because actually the name of the book is called Build the Invisible. And it sort of fits really nicely into a couple of other questions I was going to ask around that, because I think it's exactly right. You're doing the thing in a way that no one else sees, that isn't visible for a huge amount of time, but built on however what you want to call a passion, a curiosity. And almost one of the things that I am trying to sort of get around in my head is terms of what I did in the past was this sort of mindset, curiosity mindset in a way. You had a habit of reading the Times, Sunday Times, of connecting different disparate things together. Was it that curiosity / that passion, or however you want to call it, in sport and in football, that suddenly got animated by reading that, or had it been gone before that, or was there other things that you were thinking about at the same time? So, you know, I'm really interested in how you at that moment combined the thing that you were reading with your skill set, and that created a new opportunity that if you hadn't read, or if you weren't a reader, yeah, if you didn't consume, it wouldn't have compounded.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually I would say that I probably had multiple different, yeah, kind of channels or avenues in different areas, in fact, even in different industry sectors. So I wasn't kind of uniquely focused on sport. Of course, you know, I was super interested in it, and you know, the kind of spark of that moment of, okay, this actually could be the way in which I can bring my particular skill sets into that arena. That was the conversion moment, I suppose. But no, actually, you know, at that time I was also looking at other very different areas of future opportunity. You know, at that stage, I guess I was probably 5 or 6 years into my professional career, and kind of thinking, okay, what kind of, I've done a foundational level of training as you did in the law, and I had done in finance, and okay, kind of what do I want to do with it, and where do I want this to take me? And so I definitely wasn't kind of uniquely focused, but it goes back to the previous point, which is actually by having those multiple different frameworks of opportunity, that's how eventually something comes about, in fact. And you know, the move to Australia, which didn't happen, was a bit similar actually. And you know, I had that opportunity again came about through a professional connection and also a personal connection, because I was half Australian, and again a different avenue opened up. But equally, I could have gone down that avenue. But I think the point is, and I say this to my kids all the time, like that hard work, you know, and the kind of the things that you do that people don't see, actually never think that nobody notices it. And I say it to my kids, I say it to the people that I work with, the people that I manage, because actually it doesn't mean, and I think this is one of the kind of the, I guess, the tough messages, but it doesn't mean that you will get every opportunity. Of course it doesn't, because that doesn't happen to anyone. But what it does mean is that you're just always increasing the likelihood, you're always increasing your probabilities of the opportunity coming your way when it comes around, or when it next comes around. And you know, that ultimately is what you want to do, right? I want to increase the chances that those great things come my way, and they don't get handed to you on a plate. You know, maybe again, you know, maybe there is, you know, people have that misconception, but they don't, you know, and you have to seek them out, or you have to put some of these structures in place. You know, some of them may be conscious, some of them even unconscious, that help you get to that point. And I think the one other word that I wanted to kind of share with you, because it's always stuck with me. Well, I say always, it has come to me, I guess, relatively more recently, not back at the start of my career. But I think it's a great, word, because I think it encapsulates some of those things that we've talked about. And it's a word that Riot Games uses, actually. So if you know Riot, obviously huge kind of global gaming publisher, and they have, I don't know if they still have, but they always had these kind of five characteristics that they look for in a kind of Riot Games person. And one of those characteristics that always stuck with me, and it was the word they had created, was humbitious. Mm. So it was like this kind of mix of being humble about the way that you go about your work, and you keep your head down and you get on with stuff, but that doesn't mask the fact that you should be ambitious, and you can be ambitious and do those things, you know, at the same time. And I really like that. I really like that kind of balancing of those two ideas. And I think, it's just a nice way of framing the sort of traits that you want to kind of drive in, you know, and see in the people that you're, you know, that you're developing.
Is that something along the lines of not quite under promise, but over deliver, but almost like let your work do the talking for you? Believe in yourself and don't take shortcuts, invest in all the things you want to do, but impress people by your output rather than by talking a good game.
I think that's absolutely it. I think that's absolutely it. As you say, like, just make sure you consistently deliver. And actually there's nothing wrong with being ambitious, but the ambition shouldn't be the badge that you wear outwardly. It should be the thing that drives you inwardly. Yeah. Because if it's the badge that you wear outwardly, actually, yeah, you end up probably just annoying people quite a lot of the time, or just coming across in the wrong way, right? You know, that's also a life skill in itself, is, you know, working out how to, you know, to handle those competing considerations. Because yeah, the early stage of your career, of course, you know, people are ambitious and they want to get on, but they've also got to realize that, yeah, that actually the hard work is, you know, in the engine room, is ultimately what kind of people recognize and value in that kind of, you know, in the career opportunities that are going to come your way. So yeah, I'm definitely an advocate of that, as I say, and I really like the word, so I wanted to kind of share that with you, because it often comes back to me also when I'm recruiting in particular. So,
well, I think that last one, just before I know you've got to go in a few minutes, and then maybe we can keep going, because today or another time, which would be great, which is,
yeah,
in terms of then that recruitment process, because I'd be fascinated in as to how, you know, you in your current role and job are looking for, you call it talent, or looking for people. What type of characteristics are you looking for, either from what people say on their CV, say by way of interview, or do as a result of the things that you can see that subliminally or otherwise come across? You know, are there particular, not non-negotiables, but things that really excite you when you speak to people and then can see, you know, potential?
So, yeah, that's an interesting one, because obviously, kind of to be more general about it, it's probably easier in this context to talk about kind of characteristics or character traits that you look for, rather than, yeah, the specific kind of technical skills to do a job in my, you know, in my current current company, or, you know, previous one. And again, I think that, yeah, that focus on delivery, I think, is super important. But the one thing that I would probably frame in there, which again, I always think is, I don't know, I sometimes now, or I generally do now, look for, when I'm looking at somebody's CV, is the evidence of the fact that they've dealt with failure. So, you know, I think, and I think people should be, again, I think people should be really open about that. And again, wear it as an experience, a learning experience, rather than as something to be hidden. Because actually, don't know, you know, if I'm looking to employ somebody and they're a straight A student and, you know, sailed through all of their academics and then, you know, rolled into a very nice job on the back of all of that, and, you know, have, you know, been promoted, you know, twice in 3 years, and then they're looking for their next step up. And I'm looking for actually how are they going to deal with the challenges of failing, because it's going to come, right? And it's either going to be on a, you know, on a micro personal level in a project or whatever, or, you know, they're going to be involved in a, you know, a bigger challenge or bigger bit of the business, which, yeah, is not going to go to plan. And how do they deal with that, and how do they bounce back from it, and what have they, you know, what, again, what character traits have they got that tell me that they're ready, you know, they're ready to, you know, to take that on. And so, yeah, I said, I think that's a really important point for me. And I said, I also think it's something that, yeah, we shouldn't encourage people to hide from, you know, particularly in the way in which they present their career path or whatever. You know, my career path has definitely had setbacks, and I would say I've learned more, yeah, as much if not more from those, you know, those setbacks and those more difficult times than I have from, yeah, a time when everything went smoothly, because that's when you really get tested, right? And that's also when you get tested in terms of your professional capabilities, but of course you also get tested in terms of, yeah, how you can deal with it on a, how you can deal with it on a more, yeah, on a more personal and character level.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Build the Invisible with me, Daniel G. We hope you've enjoyed today's conversation and took away some valuable insights and lessons. If you'd like to learn more about the strategies and mindset discussed on the show, be sure to check out the book, my book, Build the Invisible, and the accompanying BTI journal, both available at www.buildtheinvisible.com. We also encourage you to leave us a review and subscribe to keep up to date on future episodes. Thanks for listening.